These school gardens that we developed under the nature study program unfortunately didn't produce any crops until we as graduates had left the school, so we never did have any opportunity to sample the results of our efforts. If you walk up the concrete driveway of the school today, you will see you are in an avenue of lovely trees, and in passing it might be noted that credit for these trees should be planting of these trees should be given to W.J. Gibson, who for a year or so was the temporary principal of the normal school. He was also associated with the Department of Agriculture of the province, a great tree lover, and I think he did a great deal in helping to promote the planting of trees, particularly on school grounds, throughout the province. Further to members of staff, let's not forget V.L. Denton, who later was awarded an honorary degree, a doctorate, from his university in the Maritimes. He served as vice principal under Dr. McLaurin for several years and then became principal of the school. It was my good fortune to work under him. But I and others have certainly admired the valuable contribution that he made to written geography and the text in geography which he produced with the assistance of A.E. Lord, who was a member of the staff of the Vancouver Normal School, always been recognized as a monumental work, geography text. And for a long period of time, this book, World Geography, was used in the secondary schools of the provinces of British Columbia, the province of British Columbia, and many provinces throughout Canada. Well, so much for the staff that I can recall well. There was McLaurin, Denton, Freeman, Dunnell. There was a member on staff whose name I don't recall at the moment who had the difficult task of trying to teach students in my day, particularly the men, how to teach a lesson in music at the elementary school level. What about physical education at the school? As far as the staff was concerned, this was not assigned to any regular member of the teaching staff, so to speak. But instead, it was the responsibility of two men who came to us from the armed forces with their base at Macaulay Point in those days. It was necessary that student teachers learn how to teach physical education in their future schools. And so they were given a course in this by, in my day, two sergeants who came from, who were sent there by the militia, the military. subsidized by the federal government. And one of these men took the male students and the other the female. And then there came a time when a member of the staff, a female member of the staff, taught this work to the girls, but male student teachers still received their instruction from this member or this sergeant from the forces. We were all, my day and generally speaking throughout the whole program at the normal school, students were given a course in first aid. And when they graduated, they were not given a graduation certificate from the normal school unless they had qualified in that particular field in first aid and had passed the examination given by the St. John's Ambulance Association. I think I think one of the highlights of our activity of the school program, or the program of the normal school, for the students and staff was the morning assembly. And for a long period of time, staff and students, over many years, staff and students would meet first thing in the morning in the auditorium for announcements, for a song, to listen to a record, possibly have some member of staff comment on the record, a bit of music appreciation, etc. This usually lasted about 15 minutes, generally speaking, opened with the Lord's Prayer. It was a daily event, and having been together for that short of period of time, I think it all helped to develop a better esprit de corps and a feeling of camaraderie, so to speak. And after about 15 minutes together, then the students went to their various classes. Graduation banquets were held consecutively, and certainly up until 1940, always in the school. It was just unthinkable, although students advocated this, just considered unthinkable by the staff that a graduation banquet should be held anywhere else. Elementary home economics, so to speak, taught over a number of years. It was very elementary, and there were adequate facilities, and so at the end of the year, everyone tucked in, so to speak, and or perhaps with the assistance of a caterer at times, it was possible to put on a very fine banquet in the auditorium of the school, to which maybe 200 to 300 people would sit down. At graduation time, it was customary for a presentation to be made to the school by the students who had collected funds for this purpose. Not much evidence remains of some of the presentations which were made. For a long time, the sundial presented by one group stood in front of the school. Possibly it's state of decay by now. And I can recall that for many years on the grounds of the school, again, almost in the shadow of the clock, there stood a very fine stone bench, which had been presented by a class. But again, time has had its effect.
When you were a student in a normal school, were you taught home ec? Were the men taught home ec as well as the girls?
Yes. Well, it was. I think we went in and just made up perhaps a few donuts or something like that. Not much. It was largely so that if we went out. Do you want this again? I would like to emphasize that, as far as the reference to home economics is concerned, that it was very, very elementary, and not a great deal of time was spent on it. And for many years, the program was in charge of a Miss Isbister. Miss Isbister. I think the program was geared largely to making sure that when the men and women teachers went out into their districts to teach, that they would at least be able to sustain themselves by making a nutritious meal. The men had an opportunity to take a few lessons from Mrs. Isbister, but as I say, I think the program was geared largely in that direction. It was certainly no attempt to produce teachers qualified to teach home economics at the junior or senior high school level.
There were two pools downstairs in the locker rooms. Do you remember any times?
It's always surprising that when anyone talks about the normal school or reminisces about the normal school, that questions are asked about the swimming pools. I can recall, as a student at the normal school, 1922 or thereabouts, that these pools existed. I know that was true in the men's section of the building, and there's no doubt that there was one at the other end, used by the ladies. The pools were, I suppose, roughly 6 or 8 feet by about 15, and they adjoined the washroom section and the shower section of the buildings. Downstairs, one at the east end, one at the west end, on the ground basement floor level. If you go there today, you'll find that it's almost difficult to locate these. But if you spend a little time, it soon becomes obvious that concrete capping had been placed, cappings have been placed over the pools. I don't know when this occurred, but I'm just wondering if this did not take place, if the pools were not sealed over at the time that the school was used as a convalescent home for veterans.
There was one other question. I was wondering.
I just find from the interviewer that the closure of the pools came at a much later date than I suspected.
Largely because I perhaps went home for lunch.
No, I just don't know. I know that there were a lot of changes downstairs. Would you like me to deal with that?
During the last few days, and I'm referring now to a period of about October 20 to 25, I've had occasion to go through the normal school, or Commotion College rather, largely to visit the library. Of course, the library is now operating in the what we call the auditorium, a very, very delightful room, certainly a suitable atmosphere for a library. But I've been, and so I'm conscious of the changes which have taken place in the building. In one instance, I note a change in the doors leading to the classrooms, which this having been this being necessitated by the fire marshal. Up until a few months ago, there was only one door to each classroom. Now there are two. In place of the type of door has changed. Formerly the door, classroom door, the upper half had windows, lights in it, and one could look through from the corridor unless paint had been put on the window. We now have solid core doors, and with the result that the corridor, now carpeted, couldn't afford carpets in my day, evidently. The corridors are much darker. Downstairs, I found great changes, and I know they have not taken place within the last few days, but go back to the time when Commotion College came into existence and found it necessary to acquire more and more teaching space. But downstairs on the south side, not so obvious today, but below the general level of the corridor on the south side, there was a semi-subterranean area, so to speak, where you went down steps, four or five steps, to get down to the classrooms. There were two or three rooms, or should I correct it, there was one large room there in the middle of the building on the south side, and that was the room in which manual training equipment was to be found, and that was utilized by the students in the model school, never by the teachers, the male teachers in training themselves, but just by the students of the model school. Today you'll find that subterranean area, so to speak, has been boarded over, and several classrooms exist where formerly there was one. On the other side, on the north side of the main corridor, in the basement floor, you have several rooms, and also, and again, you have a depressed area where the gymnasium exists and is still in use. Upstairs on the second floor upstairs, again, great changes have, I notice several major changes in the, particularly in the creation of additional offices and small rooms. And the what we might call the home economics area on the west end of the upper corridor, I think, has been subdivided, and more intensive use. This is all good, I must agree. I'm amazed at what is going on at Commotion College. I'm happy to see every square inch of it in use, so to speak, because there was, for many, many years, we students and staff almost rattled around in the building, so to speak. There was so much space, and it was a very delightful atmosphere in which to work. I think in the 1920s and the 30s and the 40s, the staff and students had a delightful setting in which to work compared with the crowded conditions under which the Commotion College students and staff operate.
Could you tell me where the library is situated?
Well, the library in those days, what a contrast to what you have today. The library was just to the west of the present library. In other words, to the west of the old auditorium. And believe it or not, it was approximately half the size of an ordinary classroom. No more, no less. It was probably about 35 feet by something like 25 feet. And I can remember it was a pretty crowded situation. But it was a good library, and I think we owed a great deal to the staff in building up a fine set of reference books and so on. But what a wonderful library you have today.
And the picnics that were held at the normal school?
Dances and picnics. In the early days, there were no dances, I'm sure. I don't know where to draw the line as far as years are concerned, but I'm sure that for a long period of time, no dances were held within the school itself. I can't recall any picnics. I'm no authority on that. I do know that in the 30s, and here I'm referring to the period when I was on staff myself, as far as picnics were concerned, I remember what might be called informal get-together, get-acquainted picnics, so to speak, were held particularly at the beginning of the year, where after the students had been in session for a week or two, staff and students would go down to Cattle Point or Cadbury Bay or Willows and have a barbecue, something of that nature, and spend the evening, bonfire in the evening together. I suppose the fact that when the time came for the students to return to their respective areas, their homes, for practice teaching on a month basis, shall we say, in May and so on, that perhaps made it difficult to hold a picnic. But I don't think there were dances were commonly held at the school until perhaps, maybe about 1930 or thereafter. And there again, we did have them occasionally, perhaps once a year in the course of the year, perhaps at Christmas time, I can remember dances being held. And then, of course, with the graduation ceremony, that was so.
When the students went in May, they went to teach in their own hometown, then they returned later to the normal school, did they, for
a
period?
Yeah, I think so, for the graduation itself. I think that was the case.
I was told by one teacher who taught in the 50s, right up until the end of the provincial normal school, and he said that at the end of the year, the teachers were given the power to become justice of the peace so that they could administer the oath to the students so that they were Canadian citizens.
Really?
They went to teach. Now, they didn't do this in
no.
the 30s
oh,
and
no.
the 40s when you were there.
No. No. Well, I do want to emphasize that my reminiscences, I've been dealing only with how the school operated in a general way and developments that took place up until 1942, because it was at that time that I left the school. Any other references I've made to changes with regard to the Adult Institute and Commotion College, but rather the Adult Institute come from as a result of associating with the Greater Victoria School Board at the time that the Adult Institute was being brought into being. I had no association with the operation of Commotion College because by the time it came into operation, I was no longer associated with the Greater Victoria School Board.